He said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
I am happy to be alive today, recovering from my last hammer workout. So I do feel my flesh as a result of that impact. How about you? I know that you sore.
Yeah, I'm sore. I haven't ran for a while. And I did post on Facebook the beautiful new track that we have here in Vernon that was $1 million over budget, but the Hollies are going to be enjoying it very much so. Yeah, I feel it. I feel that little run. I feel the inner thighs, and it feels really good. It's a weird kind of good, you know, but I'm happy to have started and get some fresh air and being able to train on a gorgeous new track. The bathrooms are, like, really high-end. So they've done a wonderful job.
Oh, it's an Olympic caliber international track and field standard. You were complaining about the inner thighs. Now, that just reminds me of one of the reasons why I like to do fitness and exercise is because it brings attention to your own body. Like, if you never train and never move ever, you actually lose touch with your body. And I think that's one of the ways that you can experience a severe decline in health because you're not sensitive to those changes going on.
Well, I think somebody told me one time it was called low body awareness, and I didn't even realize that that was actual condition that people have. They have a low body awareness. They're not even aware of their own body. Believe me, I got a little twinge or something, and I'm aware of it. But I think because you're athletic and you're moving all the time, it's a wonderful thing to know how your body operates. It's great. Sometimes not so great. It would be nice if I didn't feel the pain, but nonetheless, that's the way it is. Low body awareness, people.
Right on. So being aware of our bodies, what's cooking?
What's cooking is black bean soup. Now, this is just a little something-something that I just threw together because I had a whole bunch of black beans left over when I made those black bean cookies. Right? And I did that black bean cookies on our last SNU. I talked about that. They were absolutely delicious, but I had a whole bunch of black beans left over. And I thought, geez, what am I going to do with these? So I decided to make a soup. And that's usually what I end up doing. If you got a bunch of leftovers, throw it all in together and make a soup. And it usually comes out pretty darn good, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So what I did was I just added some filtered water. I sautéed some onions and some garlic and some celery and tomatoes, and I added some coconut milk, some Bragg's aminos, cumin, chilies, and Mrs. Dash, and I just let simmer for a half an hour, and it was a delicious soup. Just threw in the leftovers and a few spices, and away you go, and it was delicious. And it took no effort whatsoever, because I don't think you can freeze the black beans after they've been made, because I did use the black beans, the dry black beans, where I let them go overnight, let them sit overnight, and then I boiled them. I mean, I haven't really checked on if you can freeze them, but why would you want to freeze black beans anyways? So I do not like to throw away food, as you know. I guess I learned that from my mother, and living up here in the Great White North, groceries are very, very expensive. And if you buy high-quality food, it's even more expensive. So I like to use absolutely everything, you know, not throw anything away. So it's really great to be able to come up with some fantastic leftovers. You know, it's some really tasty combinations. You just throw it all in, and away you go. And it's just the two of us anyway. You know, if I was having company, I might think twice. But usually, you know, some of my best recipes end up to be leftovers. And I hope that you out there, when you're listening to this, that you get creative as well. Add your favorite spices to it. Coconut milk is always delicious. Add some nice Bragg seasoning. There's a multitude of things that you can do. But just use water as a base for your soups. You don't have to use that, unless it's your own homemade chicken stock or beef stock or whatever vegetable stock. Don't buy the store-bought stuff. It's just laced with garbage. And that's my story.
And you're sticking to it, huh?
And I'm sticking to it. And I'm making another soup today. We always have a pot of soup in the fridge, don't we?
Yeah, I think soups are unknown to a lot of young people. When I say young people, I mean 20s and 30s, because they don't have the time or they don't know how. It's amazing to me how few people know how to actually cook food, like just basic. But, you know, we're so separated from nature fellow in the gym the other day was telling me that kids don't understand almost everything he takes for granted about food, about where it comes from, because they don't live on farms, they don't grow up on farms, they've never been to a farm. His girlfriend thinks that we should have a national conscription program so that when you turn 18, every Canadian by law has to spend 2 years on a farm and learn how to farm.
That's the kind of conscription that I'm all for. I love that idea. Rather than going to war, use the earth and use your hands and do something productive. I think that's a really good idea. I like that idea.
Yeah, except I don't like the idea of forcing people to do anything against their will.
No,
this
right.
girl that we met on the plane when we went to England and Italy last year, Sicily, yes, she's from Australia. Remember that little cutie that was sitting beside me? And she said in her country of Australia, you have to vote. It's illegal not to vote. And if you don't vote, you'll be fined and even imprisoned if you don't vote. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool because, you know, we take it for granted. But she says, I hate that. You know, these idiots that we have to vote for. You're forced to vote for a no mind and an idiot. And so I understood that. So, you know, I think it's education. If kids were educated from the ground up, the public education system just sucks when it comes to food. You know, they should be sending these kids out on expeditions to farms. And it should be part of the groundswell information base that kids learn about food and farming. But, you know, farming is a dirty word to a lot of people. They'd rather just go buy fast food or spend no time thinking about it. So it's just a shame.
And it was funny today, one of the gals that I was training this morning, we were talking about fingernails. I said, oh, I got to go home. I got a big event tonight. I got to paint my fingernails. And I said, oh, and we're just talking about being on a farm. And I said, I remember one time I was milking a cow, and I was a city girl, and my dance partner, his family owned this 800-acre farm up in Dunster, British Columbia. And there's me milking a cow with my long red fingernails, and the cow turned around and looked at me, and I just thought it was so funny because, I mean, you know, you obviously wouldn't have long red fingernails if you were milking a cow, but it's a whole different lifestyle. It was absolutely fantastic. And yes, I think everybody should learn how to milk a cow. Whether you do it or not, find out how a chicken lays an egg and pick that egg up and then eat that egg. You know, it's just, we don't get any of that. I never was brought up like that. It's a wonderful life. Just even to experience it, whether you like it or not, I think it's important to experience it. And that's my story.
Well, I plan on ending up on a farm when I reach my latter days. I'm going to drift away and disappear into the soil.
We're going to put you out to pasture, are we?
Literally, man. Absolutely. Okay, so who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Dr. David Getoff. David Getoff is a board-certified traditional naturopath and certified clinical nutritionist. Since 1992, he has managed a private practice in San Diego, California, in traditional naturopathy and clinical nutrition. He's an accomplished lecturer and educator. And to find out more about him, just go to our website and find out more about him. Well, this guy really tells it like it is, and he uses fantastic analogies, I think. I really enjoyed his lecture for that purpose. He's not presumptuous that you know what he's talking about. And he says that when he was going to school, he said, you know, helping people is so much fun. I want to find out more about it. And that's what he liked to see, results. So he's a results-driven guy, you know, not about, well, the evidence-based medicine says that this is going to work. He's not about that. He's about, I want results-based nutritional medicine. That's pretty much his slogan. And his clients get results, and they notice the difference. And then he knows it's working for them, because you should notice a difference, right?
Well, it's all about results and outcome. I mean, if you go to the gym, you want to see some difference in outcome.
Yeah.
You want to see a return for your investment.
But however, there are times when we put people on supplementation, and, you know, I don't feel any different, I don't feel any different. Well, hello, you've been on it for 2 weeks, and you've probably skipped 4 days of those 2 weeks. It's about consistency, going back to the consistency key again. You know what I mean? You've got to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Like I said, he tells it like it is. However, he really does cover his butt, which is good, so he doesn't slander anybody. And one of his mantras is, treat your patient, not the labs. Listen to your patient, not the labs. Now, how many times have we heard people say, I had all these tests done, all this blood work, everything done, and I still feel like crap. But all my tests came back great. All my tests came back that I'm super healthy. So what's going on there? So I really understand that about treating that patient, not what the labs say, right?
I don't think most physicians can interact with their patients in the way that he does. They're not trained to do that. They're trained to rely on the drug reports and the test results. And once that element of the relationship is removed, they just don't know how to talk to you, because really they don't talk to people. I mean, how much time do they actually spend talking to people, right?
Right. They are on an assembly line. And he says that people are conditioned to think that when you have a problem, you go to the doctor. However, the doctors treat with drugs. That's how they're trained. They treat with drugs. Most people don't know that most doctors can only suppress the symptoms. They don't know how to treat the disease or get to the root cause. It's only how to suppress the symptom. So that's what today's doctors are all about. Right? I'm covering my butt here, and I'm generalizing a lot because there's some fantastic medical doctors out there. But, you know, every time I've gone, it's all about, here's a prescription, here's a prescription, here's a prescription. Right? I'm going, oh, okay, you're not going to
ask me. It's almost like a multi-level company. It's so typical. My experience started in that regard when I was, I think, 14. I was living in Burnaby, and I can't remember why I went, but I went to a doctor. I was sent there through my mother. I think I went to see her physician. And I was so upset with the experience that I vowed that I would never do it again. Number one, I had to wait like an hour to see the dude. And the dude was just like, he didn't talk to me. He didn't get any eye contact. He treated me like I didn't matter. I just thought, you're a disgrace to this profession. And I know that this profession is a lot more than what you are presenting. So, you know, I can see why people get really bitter towards medicine, but when medicine is practiced correctly, it's a wonderful thing, you know, but it's all about people. This is what Getoff is all about. He's all about people, right?
Right, and he probably doesn't see 100 people a day. I like what they do. You sit in a medical clinic and you wait in the medical clinic for 45 minutes. Then they take you into a little room and you wait another 45 minutes. And then they come in, the doctor comes in for 2 minutes. It's like, I waited an hour and a half, but that's just the way it is, and that's the system, and that's the way you bite the bullet and you do it if you want to go. So I accept that's the way it is if I have to go. But anyway, what else about him? He just is fantastic. And he says that sometimes the best thing that ever happens to his patients is that they become very ill. They have cancer, and they say it's the best thing that ever happened to them, as it changed their lives to make them healthier and change their lifestyle. They really get that whatever they were doing wasn't working, so let's change it. Okay, so an interesting point that he did mention was something that people have talked to you about, is that you always try to fix everybody around you. And if you've got a loved one, like a family member or a really good friend, and they're sick, and you keep on them and telling them, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do in a healthier alternative way, and they're just not listening. They don't care, he says, well, then just stop. Just stop and let them be on their way. Don't bother with them. That's the choices that they've made. However, he says, what you do need to ask them, which is really important that if you're into this, he says you need to ask them, would you like to be healthier if you could do it in a different way? That's what he says. And if they said, well, yeah, sure, I would like to be healthier if I could do it differently than what I'm doing, then that's when you can talk to them about some alternatives. But if they say, nah, I'm destined for that, I don't care, then leave them alone, right? Because all you're going to do is alienate them from your life.
Yeah, right? Let go, let health.
Yeah, exactly.
I wrote an article on it. You can read it online on our website. Just, you know, stop doing it, right? Leave people alone.
Yeah.
Let them die in their own way, I suppose.
And another beautiful thing that he talked about, because we've heard this, I don't know, umpteen million times, expensive urine. Oh, those vitamins, you just get expensive pee, that's all. You just pee it out. And he says, I want expensive urine. It's okay. I know my cells, my body is full then. I want to have expensive urine. If it's not harmful, you want extra. But if it's harmful, then you need to know how much you need. Because there are some supplements that you only should take a certain amount of and know how much for your body weight or your activity that you're taking. but expensive urine is okay. And I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I write about that in the course material. Actually, him and I are similar in many, many ways. You know, I think that when you practice natural medicine and you have that consciousness, that you learn the same principles, you read the same text, the same books, and you become aware of the politics. And he's a bit of a cynic, too. I think he's been burned and attacked and mistreated, and so he's very cynical in that regard. But he's on guard. But at the same time, he's prepared to give 100% to those that are willing to do the work that he recommends and prescribes.
Another thing that he advocates is vitamin C with vitamin A. He said the vitamin A is a really great fighter for infection, as is vitamin C. So the combination, if you feel any little tinge, something coming on, massive doses. And I like that. And also, very, very interesting, pycnogenol before going out in the sun. This will give you the benefits of the sunscreen, but not the harmful effects of lathering on a sunscreen. So that was really interesting, the antioxidant pycnogenol. So I'll be taking some of that before I'm going into the sun. I don't wear sunscreen anyway, unless I was going out on a boat or something like that, or I just cover up now. But very interesting. I mean, we've got to get him on again, because that guy just didn't even hit the tip of the iceberg.
I know, he's loaded. He's loaded. He's got a vast amount of experience, and there's nothing like experience compared to the ivory tower intellectual egghead knowledge, right? You need both, I think. You need to study and learn and do the research.
So thank you, Dr. David Getoff. And he says all you need to do is just Google Dr. David Getoff and you'll see his website, and he's got nothing to sell, just lots of information. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah. I remember when I first talked to him, he says, yes, that's right. My name is Getoff, so get over it.
Yeah.
Because that's the first thing that comes to mind, right? When you see his name, Getoff, you know, certain things come into your mind. And so I'm sure he's been, you know, approached by many people and made fun of. Who knows, right? You can go on and on with that one. Good stuff. Okay, so what's our hot topic?
Our hot topic this month is knowing when to stop. Now, this can relate to mental, physical, emotional health, knowing when to stop a relationship, when to stop training in athletes, when you don't like a coach or a teacher or a sport or a job. When do I stop? When do I endure it, tolerate, or accept, or just stop? I think, how did we get on this topic with something about, I remember you were telling me you're starting to throw the hammer, which is a total different training than the bodybuilding.
Absolutely.
So it affects your body, right?
Totally.
And you knew enough, you had enough common sense, Dr. Holly. You said, okay, I've had enough today, I'm feeling it, I'm going to go home now. I'm not going to do a couple more turns, you know, and you did it, and that was good. Because usually, when we were younger, what we used to do, we'd keep going through it. Although we know we hurt our back or our calf muscle or our groin, we'd keep going. And it's like, that has got to be the stupidest thing to do. So you just have to know when to stop and get to know your body again. Body awareness, right?
Well, it has to do with age. Older people in their 50s and 60s, when they vote more conservatively. They're more conservative. They take less risks. They're concerned about other things that are different than, say, the young people, you know? So that's pretty obvious. I think a lifetime of experience teaches you that the pain that is at risk here by the behavior or associated with doing whatever it is you're thinking of stopping becomes more clear as a factor in your mind. It's not if it's going to happen, but when. So you just realize it's not worth it, and then you stop. And then I think that kind of cautionary principle is lacking in a lot of young people, and perhaps that's why they get such severe injuries and get involved with things and people and relationships and workplaces that are very, very toxic.
So when do you stop? You can have a job where you love the work. You absolutely love the work, but you can't stand the people you work for. Or you like the people you work with, but the owner or the manager is just a real dick and just really makes your life uncomfortable. What do you do? What do you do? Now, I'm not saying this is a career. I'm saying this is a job, okay? There's a difference between a career and a job, I think. And so, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how badly you need the money, what you're doing. But I don't think I could tolerate that. I know for me, I'd have to leave. I couldn't tolerate that baloney unless there was a method to my madness and I knew I would climb the ladder and I absolutely had to do what I had to do and endure it for a certain amount of time. But some people continue to go to this job that they absolutely hate. They wake up in the morning and they do not want to go to that job. I couldn't imagine living like that. I don't want to live like that.
Well, not for the long term anyway, and I think that's what the issue really is. Now, I use health as my standard for anything. So if anything is compromising my health, then I know it's not sustainable and I've got to pull away. Maybe not today or tomorrow, but I need to start thinking about a different approach and an alternative exit strategy. Then also, I think everything can be reduced to risk, cost, and benefit. So yeah, it sucks being here, but the money is ginormous and I'm paying off my boat or my house, or my mother needs excess money for the medical bills, which we could never afford without. So I'm going to suffer on her behalf. You know, it all depends on the situation. It depends on your moral standards. Some people will put up with a lot of immorality for money. They'll justify it. You know, they'll sell tobacco, you know, when they know it's killing people, and they'll say, well, it's just a job. I need a job, even though inside they know that they're in conflict, and then they put up with that for a long time. And eventually their behavior begins to reveal that conflict. You know, they might develop an eating disorder, or they might develop an addiction, or they might start beating on their kids or whatever. Who knows, right? People are strange and weird.
Right, exactly. So I'm thinking that there has to be a means to an end. So if you're doing a job that's really great pay, but you don't really like the work, then you need to make sure that you're reaping some rewards, like taking some holidays, or buying something that you needed in your life. You know, you wanted to get a house, you wanted to get a new car. You have to see the rewards of what you're working for, and that really should sustain you. And what about liking a coach or a teacher or a sport? Let's say they're the only one in town, and this is what you've got. Like,
well, then again, you have to evaluate what your options are. And a lot of people are not often aware of the options, or they're afraid to change, or they're afraid they won't meet someone else's approval. They really don't want to do it, but mom and dad or grandpa and grandma or whoever is demanding that they stick with it. You know, you've got to stay with it. Otherwise, you're a failure. You're a loser. I brought to mind Ruby when she joined a volleyball team and she didn't like it. She hated going. What am I going to do? Make her continue going? Now, she liked the sport of volleyball, but she didn't like the coach. She didn't like how they practiced. She didn't like a lot of things. So we know about sport type. We know that there are sports that people hate and sports that people love. Why would you possibly force someone to play a sport that they absolutely hate, or that maybe in that particular year or season they have a real asshole coach? Like, some of these coaches can be real pricks. They're really mean, and the coach isn't going anywhere. There's politics, and you could be the parent that even has a talk with them, and they'll just tell you to, you know, mind your own business or whatever. So, yeah. You know, there's always an alternative approach. You can quit the team and maybe go to another team, which would be an entirely different experience, or just come to terms with it yourself and say, you know, I've got too much pride, I've got too much dignity, I have too much self-esteem to put up with this crap, and it ain't going away no matter what I do. You know, the boss at work, he's not leaving. So I have to live with this for months and months and months and go crazy? Forget it. I'd rather do something else.
Well, I think that also has with a lot of confidence and self-worth and self-esteem.
For sure.
When you're younger, you don't realize, well, hey, I had a lawyer once. I didn't realize I could fire that lawyer because that lawyer was not doing the job for me. I said, I need to feel secure going into court here. So, you know, well, that's not my job, she says, is to make you feel good. I'm like, okay, bye-bye now. You know, you're supposed to hold my hand through this, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, you can do that sort of thing. So I felt really good about that. Then I hired me a pit bull lawyer and made me feel real good, and I won my case. Like, it was about a fire, an insurance claim. So that's what that was.
People. Well, what about this one, knowing when to stop as it applies to what we call addictions, right?
Oh, yeah.
When is it time to stop the drug, the alcohol, the tobacco, the substance that you're abusing? When is it time? I think that if there is abuse, again, health is a standard. If anything about you is being compromised from a health point of view and it's not sustainable, then that's the time to pull the plug, to stop. And that's very difficult in that scenario, to stop something that gives you an enormous amount of pleasure. But then you have to, when you come down from it, focus on the pain and say, my goodness, this pain is horrible. Then, of course, you do the drug or the substance again to escape the pain. But then you're going to continue to deteriorate and lose touch with everything that's really important, like your family, your kids, your job, or whatever.
Well, is it harmful? Do no harm, right?
Exactly.
Do no harm. And so if it's harmful, then you know what you're walking into, right? So you have to make sure that whatever you do is not going to harm you. Even whether it's a supplement, a food, a cigarette, a drug, prescription drug, running across the street when there's a lot of traffic, hanging out with a certain person who's toxic. You know what I mean? It's just you have to know, yeah, is it harmful? People can be harmful. So is it harmful to me? Well, then I do it with caution. And when we get to be abusive behavior, then it's time to get out. When the bad times outweigh the good times, that's when you get out. And that's what a friend of mine told me one time about relationships. He had a lot of girlfriends at that time. He says, well, when the bad times outweigh the good times, I get out. And I'm going, oh, okay. So there you have it. Know when to stop.
Right on. Okay, and it's time to stop this interview and discussion. So what's your final word?
My final word is by Meryl Streep. It's bizarre that the produce manager is more important to my children's health than the pediatrician.